From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys for this week. Got a very uplifting show for you, recording on Valentine's Day over in the US there. So, no Hunter to help brighten up the mood, but never mind, he's probably got a hot date or he's drunk or both or, I don't know, one or the other. But, very happy to have a fill-in for him, a long overdue one. Of course, before we do that, got John over in Colorado. What's going on, brother?
Hello. Pretty good. Pretty good, I think.
All right. And,
sort of
what? Hi?
No, I wish. After watching this, so, you know.
Yeah, really, right?
We'll get into it on the show.
Yeah, and the long, long overdue return of Super Mexican. What's going on, pendejo?
Hello, how are you doing, man? You told me you were gonna fire Hunter because you wanted cheap Mexican labor on the podcast.
It doesn't come any cheaper than the podcasting because it's just all them dollars to be made, right? There's money in them podcast sales to be made, right?
You said you were going to pay me in pesos and tacos.
That might be possible, although the U.S. dollar is probably dropping in power so much.
What's a taco dollar exchange these days?
Okay. It's the Australian dollar. My God, it's like 3 cents, 3 American cents, I think.
I think I'm going to start doing that daily on my Twitter account, the daily dollar to taco exchange.
I
think it's a service to mankind.
It really is. It's like the cilantro greenback or some sort of thing you can call it. Do you use cilantro in tacos over there?
Oh, well, you know what we do is we put cilantro in a pico de gallo, and accoutrement that you put into tacos. So
okay.
Yeah, definitely. There's a really weird thing where I guess there's a lot of white people, if you're not exposed to cilantro early on, it's an acquired taste. And there was a whole New York Times
like Vegemite,
expose,
right?
About it. Yeah. What's that?
A bit like Vegemite.
I've never had that, so I don't know. But it's
ask kind of the joy of Vegemite, believe me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember from a previous podcast. But they say that the cilantro to some white people tastes like soap. And this is just like the weirdest thing to me because I've always I've had it my whole life. And yeah, so it's a very acquired taste. But if you like it, it's amazing.
Anyway, this week we got a very uplifting film for you all to pick up your spirits and enlighten your Valentine's Day, even though it's going to be a week later than that once you've heard this, once it drops, but whatever. So, yeah.
It'll be like Greek Orthodox Valentine's Day. You know, all their holidays happen a week after ours, so it's
true.
Yeah. Or it could be like Chinese Valentine's Day, or just whenever the hell they want to do it.
Maybe a month later, probably
every 3 years or something. Yeah, whatever.
It's like horrible for the Valentine's Day. It was like the year of the monkeys. Like, is the orangutan going to get raped or some shit? Are they?
I saw people were posting Twitters of black people who were angry that Google had monkeys on their Google thing for a Black History Month. And they're like, what the hell? What kind of racism is that? And they're like, dude, oh, it's Jesus. The year of the monkey. Come on.
Well, it's the lack of classical education in schools, so...
Yeah, the outrage mob on Twitter. Not that I participate in that.
No, of course not. No.
But anyway.
What is Black History Month anyway? What do you learn?
I think Beyonce releases a new video every year.
Yeah.
And then that's about it. We all watch a Super Bowl halftime show.
Do they give like a crash course of how to steal televisions and shit?
Oh, Jesus.
And while you're carrying a malt liquor, like a Colt 45 or something?
It's like the Wayans brothers wrote tonight's show. But no, what it is, it's like for a month, if you're in a public school for a month, you have like a focus on learning black history, which I think is kind of silly because it's really all history.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a segregation of American history, because that's what we need, more segregation.
Why don't they have a Mexican History Month?
They might. Here in Colorado, we're big on Cesar Chavez Day or whatever, so they probably do have stuff like that in our public schools. You know,
speaking
of
that.
They kick out all the illegal immigrants on Cesar Chavez Day, because that's what Trump should name his illegal immigrant plan, you know, the Cesar Chavez illegal immigrant plan.
I think what they'll do is for Mexican History Month, instead of every school kid around the country planting a flail, they'll just give them 10 bricks each to build a wall.
Jeez.
All right, get it out of your system.
That's what Trump wants. Well, that's what your future president wants, right? He wants that big-ass wall.
No, I'm voting Bernie. I'm voting Bernie.
Oh, okay.
For the revolution.
You want the magic. You want free college.
But then again, there's that famous Penn Jillette quote, or someone said it on Penn and Teller. They said, show a Mexican a 50-foot wall and he'll bring a 51-foot ladder.
Oh, yeah.
Which is probably true. It's like,
he's just going to fall 50 feet and die. I mean, you know, whatever.
It would only work if it was manned, like, full-time by, like, National Guard or something. I just don't see it happening.
All those rednecks in cartel land. Have you seen that documentary?
No, I haven't watched that yet.
Oh, my goodness.
We were thinking about possibly doing that if nobody was up for cap. What is this? What's the name of this again?
Capturing the freedoms. Stupid Jewish in denial pedophiles is what it should be called.
Wow, this is going to be a rough podcast.
This is going to be hideous.
I think one of us has already figured out what they believe about the movie. Well, you know, when you have 12 kids, I think watching a pedophile movie is kind of tough, but
it's not.
I have ditched all my illegitimate children across the country, so it's not as an emotional thing for me. But
there's a bunch of children running around with a Lucha Libre mask going, we're daddy.
There's an Ultimo Dragon, there's an Atlantis, there's a Santo, and a Blue Demon, I'm sure.
Wow. Well, that's impressive. Jeez, I can't even do that.
I actually watch what I make jokes about, so there we go.
That is fantastic. Actually, let me give you a recommendation then. I just saw an amazing movie on the life. It's like a documentary. It's a docudrama based on this Mexican actor from a while ago. His name is I forgot his name. Cantinflas. Do you know who Cantinflas is?
It's familiar. No. I couldn't tell you.
He was just like this super international, you know, Latin American star who's a comedian. And there's a movie that came out called Cantinflas, and it is fantastic. Like, it's one of the best movies. I was really impressed by it. But of course, you know, this is owing to my, my being raised in that community and knowing about him. But I thought it was fantastic. It would be really good to watch. But
yeah, okay.
But let's get back to pedophiles.
Right.
Yes, this cunt, what's his name? Cantinflas?
Cantinflas? Yeah, not with a U, with an A.
No, I didn't say it that way. You did, actually. I was just trying to get the pronunciation right. Well, the pronunciation right, but I couldn't get it. So, yeah.
I'm sure it's not as depressing as this movie.
Oh, my God. No. I know one thing. If I ever move to New York, I ain't renting out New York's number one birthday clown. Fuck
no.
That.
Yeah, that is there's all sorts of weird things going on with that movie, but that was the worst. Now, did you guys watch any of the extras, the stuff that came along?
I watched a confrontation at the screen.
Oh, that is fantastic.
Which was probably the best of the extras. Yeah, it was basically the detective that was interviewed. Actually, two of the detectives arguing with the journalist.
Yeah. At one point, he's like talking about, she's talking crap about some woman, and he's like, oh, she's right there. She's right there in the audience.
All right. No,
but the intro to it is really good. There's like a little piece where they explain how the movie came about, and it's actually good in and of itself. And so basically what it is the director, Andrew Jarecki, he wanted to do a documentary on child entertainers, which sounds like the most boring movie in the world to me, but whatever, what do I know? So he started interviewing child entertainers, I guess, in New York, and every one of them would say, oh, you know, if you're going to do a movie about us and you really need to talk to this guy, he's a number one guy. Everybody knows him. He's like the Elvis of child entertainers. And he's like, oh, cool. Like, you know, I'll get in touch with this guy. So he finally gets in touch with him, interviews him. And he's going through the whole thing, like, how'd you get into this, you know, like, why do you do it, all this stuff. And he asks him this question about, excuse me, it's Black History Month, so I have to say, he asks this question. He says, so tell me about your family. And he says, no, like, I don't ever talk about my family. And he's like, oh, well, that's interesting, because this is actually a good director who cares about interesting subjects. And he says, why? Like, what's, you know, why don't you want to talk about your family? He's like, it's just personal. Like, I never talk about my family. Forget about it. So this sticks in the director's mind, and he's like, I'm going to, you know, look this up and find out what's going on. So he looks it up, finds out this incredible story, his background to this entertainer, the number one child entertainer in New York City. And so he goes back to him. He says, look, like, I know, you know, what happened. And if you want to talk about it, I think it'd be interesting to talk about. So the guy's like, all right, fine, let's talk about it. So after a while of unfolding this, like, incredibly dramatic story, right, he says, oh, by the way, if you want to make a movie about this, we, like, every one of the brothers we all liked in my family, we all like to take video. So I have hundreds of hours of film footage from when this thing happened. And right then, it's like, wow.
That's like a gold mine right there.
Yeah. And then he makes what I think is an unbelievably, you know, dramatic and just emotion, you know, embroiling movie. I just love it. I think it's amazing, but it is super depressing. So
it is.
That intro I thought was fascinating. And the movie that happened because of it sounds way better than a bunch of interviews with it. Bunch of weird, you know, child entertainers.
They messed up. That family's messed up. You every know, one of them.
I don't blame Seth for not wanting to be interviewed. I'll put it.
Yeah,
way.
Really, right?
Yeah,
right.
It would be in the same film with his crazy ass family. Like they all come off like it's different degrees of lunacy. It's just insane.
Yeah, but there is a good piece I watched straight after the. For the documentary today, which is on YouTube, which someone has done. I don't believe it's a DVD extra. I highly doubt it. It's called What Was Left Out. Have you guys seen that?
No, haven't seen it.
Okay. It runs about 10 minutes, and it brings a pretty good case against the fact that what I thought was a very good documentary is now just an average one, because the filmmaker's view has been askew to a pro-Friedman sort of stance.
Right.
There's 5 points that this person on YouTube brought up, which is very, very good, which was the Geraldo interview of Jesse Friedman from 89, where he confesses to more kids being raped and tortured and stuff like that. That's never mentioned in the whole documentary, not even brought up. There was a third defendant. Do you guys know that at all?
I read about it in Wikipedia, and that's about it.
They mention it in that extra that you were talking about of the showing in New York, where
right.
You know, the audience is filled with a bunch of people from the movie, and they get up and start, you know, complaining about it. But I guess one of the kid's family or one of the kid's friends turned state's evidence. Right? Is that the guy you're talking about?
Yeah, that would be it.
Yes, that's the one. Yep, that guy. So he's never mentioned or brought up in the whole thing at all, which I find a massive oversight of the filmmaker. The 13 children who were abused, they only speak to, what, two? And apparently the filmmaker, Jarecki, says, I could only get a hold of a few and the others didn't want to be interviewed. And then he goes to the New York Times a few months later when he's being interviewed, and gives another number of kids, and then there was this outcry once the film had come out, all, like, about 6 to 8 others who were not interviewed for the documentary reached out to the Academy and said, we were abused, no one ever came to see us, we had no correspondence from the filmmaker. So it's this, you know, sort of progression of things that this filmmaker's just sort of, you know, very casually left out, and when quizzed about it, I was like, oh, I didn't think it was important. Well, it's completely important.
Yeah.
To have a very unbiased approach to a film. But I think this is a bit biased, and we'll get into it. Okay, when did you guys first see this? Soup.
I think I saw it pretty soon after it came out, maybe like a year or two later, and I don't know why. I just happened to stumble on it, and I think what I really like about it is that it kind of, the way that he shoots it, the way that he lays out, you know, the storyline, the argument, it's very captivating, but also whatever you want to say about the extra details that you're bringing up, the movie in itself, I think, brings up a lot of questions about how you remember things, how people's minds get into this track that they want to believe something, and then they make things fit it instead of trying to make sense of the evidence that they see in front of them. And there's so many different examples of that happening. I think that's what really captivated me about it when I first saw it. And I still think it's an impressive piece of work, even though there might be questions about if they were actually fair to the case, like you're saying.
But the one thing I couldn't understand was that older son, that David Friedman, it's like his denial of the fact, oh, my father's a good man. It's like, the evidence is in front of you. I mean, I can't think of one person who can watch this documentary and say, oh, that Arthur, he may not have done it. What's his name? Arnie.
Yeah.
Arnie Friedman, he may not have done it. He's got books of child porn lined up behind the piano. He's got them stashed. He's got reels of film. What more do you need to know? It's just, how can you? He looks like an idiot. He comes across like an idiot in this, like a real twit in the documentary.
I think the movie, at least I came, walked away with the movie thinking that there is a strong possibility that he didn't that he didn't molest any kids, and his story, you know, could have happened, which is that he definitely has a problem with kids. Like he is sexually attracted to kids, and he was caught with child porn. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he did anything. He later admits that he did something when he was younger, right?
Yeah.
But does that mean that everyone who does that when you're a kid does it when you're older? I mean, there's a strong, you know, of course you have to say, it's very likely that he did. But we're talking about a case in law, and you have to be able to prove these things. And the way they set out the evidence, I guess what I saw is that this was a case of like that therapist was saying, or the reporter, It really did seem like a case of hysteria. At least what you can say is that the police bungled the case. They did it. They screwed this up really badly.
You think so?
Because I think so. I mean, the interviews from the kids where they're talking about, they're talking about things that don't make sense, that don't corroborate. You know, they were talking about that leapfrog thing, which was just absurd.
No, that was insane. Disgusting.
I mean, it's certainly disgusting, but they were talking about things where, you know, these kids would have had to be bloody and, like, you know, soaked with bodily fluids and whatever, and none of the parents noticed it. Like, a lot of the stuff just doesn't make sense. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I don't know. I agree in the scenario that especially the way it was laid out by the filmmakers, it's weird because when I was watching it, I think later on the father admitted in therapy had molested one of the friend's kids at their beach house or something. And it's like that told me, well, there's something clearly wrong. He clearly needs to be in jail. Jesse, I was kind of questioning the guilt, but it was so back and forth with his lawyer and him. Like we each had a different version of what was happening back then, and also, but his kind of nonchalant, goofy attitude the day he was going to jail.
Oh, that was ridiculous! Right. I couldn't believe that.
It was just like, okay, he's either completely deranged and probably needs to be behind bars, or he's guilty and just, you know, thriving on it. Because I couldn't imagine an innocent person.
That is not that. Exactly. It's not. Oh, so that's not an innocent man.
So here's the thing. I'm glad you brought that up. I think that this is another of those things where it's a difference of people, where they're from and what kind of culture you're in and that kind of thing, where you can't imagine somebody doing that. But what if that's your coping mechanism? What if you know that this horrible thing is happening to you and that's how you deal with it? That's the way they present it.
You should be locked the fuck away.
Well, if you're guilty, absolutely. But what I'm saying is the cops looked at this and they said, wow, these people are sick and they're disgusting because they're guilty and they're dancing and they're laughing and whatever. But if you're innocent, and it's your last moment together, are you going to sit there brooding and upset and angry? Or are you going to – some people are going to try to try to have a good time and try to at least have some moment of happiness. I'm not saying I would, because I'm naturally depressed, but I'm saying that that is something that I could see people doing, and other people looking at them thinking, you're insane, you know?
Right. So theatrical Long Island Jews deal with prison sentences by being theatrical. Right?
And what about, you know, that lady cop who...
Oh, the detective, yeah.
She was saying, like, there's no way the family could not have known about this, because there was stacks and stacks of child porn everywhere, by the piano, in the living room. The whole family had to be in on it, and they show the pictures, and none of that happened. It's not – like, he did have lots of child pornography, but it was all hidden away, and nobody knew about it. But she convinced herself that it happened. I mean, that is just amazing to me, that you could be – that far off in your memory that you can convince yourself that something absolutely happened that didn't happen at all.
So then the documentary becomes a bunch of deranged kind of Italians and Jews, is it? Which is basically New York anyway. And one Mexican.
Yeah, that's right. That's the only reason they're not in there, because there's no Mexicans in New York except for me. But
except you.
I guess what I like about it is that what it brings up is how difficult it is to actually get to the truth. Is we like to organize things in black and white ways because it's easier to digest and easier to accept and condemn or completely accept or whatever. And what it did is it showed how it is actually very difficult to get to the truth when people's memories are in play, when, you know, this is the kind of case where I think these people weren't used to investigating. They didn't know how to do it. They didn't know how to question these kids. There's a lot of reasoning to believe that they might have, suggested that these things happened to these kids, and they just went along with it. There's that whole hypnosis thing. I mean, there's just all these things that put it into doubt. And I guess what I liked about the movie is that it made you think one thing, and then it made you think the other, and then it made you think it's just a roller coaster.
Yeah, but if you go into hypnosis, you get something implemented in your mind. It's temporary until the hypnosis is over. It doesn't stay there permanently.
Yeah, and
you get put under hypnosis. Let's say those magicians, they say, when you hear me clap my hands, you'll walk around and think you're a zebra or something like that, right? That's something implemented temporarily until you're snapped out of that hypnosis.
Yeah.
So...
Well, another problem was they didn't talk to that many of the victims.
Well, that's my whole point about this piece of that YouTuber brought up. Is that they didn't talk to anybody. They had one guy in an audio tape, and the other one was in silhouette. Okay, I understand he wants to be in silhouette for a reason.
Sure, sure.
And then they had one student who had never seen any, said he had never encountered or seen anything, and said there was pressure among the parents to have the kids say they were molested or something.
That's the real hole in this movie.
That he was pressured by the cops to say something happened, and by his parents and by everybody else, and he just couldn't go along with it. And he said that the accusations were so insane that they could not have happened unless he saw them, and he didn't see anything.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing is that kid who was talking about it from the shadows, they catch him in a discrepancy, right? And it's really weird. Like, it's just the whole thing, it creeps me out. It just seems like everyone up in Great Neck, New Jersey are just a bunch of creepy weirdos. But anyway, this guy is like, he's given his you know, what he remembers, and he says, well, you know, all the molestation was personal, like it was off in small rooms and nobody saw it and whatever. And then he brings up the leapfrog thing. And the guy's like, oh, yeah, I remember leapfrog. And he does it in a very dramatic, you know, like weird way. He's like, yeah, I remember. That was really bad. That was really bad. I remember that. They would hop, you know, on each of us, and then they'd, you know, do this nasty thing and move on to the next thing. And the guy's like, but wait a minute. I thought you said that all the molestation happened separately and none of you saw it. It was all personal. And you can see it, you can tell, like, there's a silence where he's processing it, and it really sounds like he's trying to figure out how to make it fit. And he says, well, and he talks really fast, which is what people do when they're trying to put one over on you. He's like, well, molestation is something that happens, you know, one-on-one. That's not the same thing as something that happens out in the open when there's everybody together. And so that wasn't really molestation. That was more like rape, and molestation happened on the side. And I was like, it's just weird.
I'll tell you one thing. I will never ever be able to play Frogger on the Xbox again without feeling sick.
Oh God,
thinking about that shit. Oh boy.
Yeah, there's so many holes in that, and I remember, you know, seeing these stories in the news, and then later finding out that it really was hysteria, that it was a bunch of, you know, kids making accusations because the cops pressured them into it, because the cops themselves were pressured by parents. They wanted to get down to a solution to, you know, whatever, to these accusations. And then it turned out that nothing really happened, or something very small happened that wasn't anywhere near what the accusations
were. Well, we don't know.
No, of course not. No,
nothing's clear. Dysfunctional. I just still think that that's one of the most fucking dysfunctional families I've ever seen in my life.
It's literally,
seriously, they make the Manson family look sane as well.
yeah. Well, I think what I liked about it is that they were so open about what was going on, and that they did record these things, and you really did see, you know, these raw emotions of these people trying to figure this out. And you would hope that, for one thing, let's assume that they're innocent, which I know you don't think they are. But if they were innocent, they're here, they're debating whether or not the father should plead guilty to save the son. And you put yourself in that situation and you think, like, wow, like, you know, that is really difficult. Like, that is really, really difficult. Do you lie to save your kid and go to prison? Or do you stick up for what's right and possibly screw everyone over? And you see it.
I like the fact they're actually doing
it. This is their,
they're doing it during a Passover as well at the kitchen table. It's a way to celebrate.
Yeah, it is amazing. It's one of the, I mean, like, I can't think of another time where you see really raw emotions like that that isn't scripted, you know, as far as you can tell. Apart from these people who are just very dramatic and they like recording themselves, you know, reality TV isn't like that. I mean, it's just remarkable in the fact that these people recorded this, and you see them yelling and screaming at each other, and you see the family disintegrate. And by the end, you really don't know. I mean, you really don't. And you see a lot of evidence on both sides. From my perspective, I look at it philosophically, and I think that whatever you think happened here, I think what it points to is that truth is very difficult to get at. We try to make sense of the world as best we can, and we look for evidence, but to get absolute 100% truth about things is very, very difficult, and it's very rare.
Even with a confession?
With a confession, and, you know, as many investigators who are completely invested in trying to find out the truth, sometimes you just can't get to it, you know?
Mm.
I mean, think about, too, how they hid the fact that the brother was gay until the very end, right?
Oh, that was my favorite scene with that queer-ass boyfriend with the dog. It's like, oh, this is perfect. Yeah. I forgot about it.
I mean, even – I don't think Jarecki did this on purpose. I think this is probably –
oh, yes, he did. Come off it.
You think so?
I think so.
It's bias, though.
Yeah, I think he did it on purpose.
For sure.
But people can't – you know, they can't even bring themselves to even consider that there might be a connection between someone being molested as a kid and then eventually turning out gay, right? They just can't – like, they can't even conceive of that.
I did.
Right. You see this movie and you're like, oh, geez, like – yeah, that was kind of obvious from the beginning. But, you know, those are the kind of biases that go into, you know, I think us three kind of see through that. But think about people who aren't like us, who aren't, vaguely right-wing weirdos. They really buy into that, and they're not going to see that at all. They're going to be like, oh, my gosh, wow, he's gay, too. That's really weird. I wonder where that came out of.
Well, what came out of him to cause him to become gay?
Well, yeah, because he was saying that he didn't remember his brother molesting him or anything. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it turns out to be gay. So it's like, yeah, not a lot of people would make that connection. Oh, basically, it was two gay, you know, it was two gay brothers. You know.
What a coincidence. That is so weird.
One of them likes child porn, and it's a pedophile.
One of them just couldn't go out and get a proper boyfriend and be normal about his sexuality. Wanted to go around looking for little kids. It's just fucked up.
Well, it was a weird thing. The mother was an oddball too, because she reminded me of like those serial killer wives that act like they didn't know anything.
Oh, that mother had the biggest emotional detachment I've ever seen in anybody.
I know, just like mentally blocking everything. You know,
it's like she waited for that guy to just go to prison and die. That was all she was waiting for. Like, funny, she remarried pretty quick after he died. It wasn't that long.
Yeah, I think she was seeing that guy before he even went to prison.
Easily.
Well, and then, you know, they go even further into the history of this family, and they go into Arnold, the father, and his brother, and their past, right? Mm-hmm. And how their mother divorced their father really early on after their sister died.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then she started bringing around guys to their home and having sex with them while the kids were around, and they're, like, you know, very young. Mm-hmm. And again, like, it's something that you have to infer because they don't say it out loud, but you do have to wonder, like, what does that warp a little kid's thinking about what sex is? Because it was very soon after, that's when he started, you know, experimenting with kids his age, but then he couldn't get past that age.
I think it depends on if you actually visually see the act compared to hearing it from halfway down the house. Okay, it's a dramatic difference. You know, if it's performed, if it's like the Orange People where they just literally do it in front of their kid, which is fucking messed up. Yeah, I get it. You know, obviously going to be scarred from that. But if it's something that you hear your parents doing, you think, oh, okay, you know, they're having a bit of a tangle in bed, whatever. Yeah, I think you're scarred as much as you would but visually, you know, then visually, you know, stripping off and, you know, hitting three different positions in front of you. Yeah.
Well, I was wondering if Jarecki had even intended some of those meanings to come out there or those questions. Because, you know, this is made for your average NPR listener that just thinks everybody's wonderful except right-wingers, you know. All gays are great. Child molesters are misunderstood. You know, that sort of thing.
Right, and all gays are just naturally born that way, and nothing in their experience.
Child porn is legal in the Netherlands, so it should be legal everywhere. You know how they think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. By the way, Netherlands, you're a fucked up country. Seriously.
Yeah. Like they point out that he gets his magazines from Netherlands. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, it's legal.
What the hell's going on there?
Yeah, that's messed up. Any people from the Netherlands, please don't listen, because we don't want your ears. Except on a plate. Just fuck off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't want you listening or vampires listening in your coffin. There's movies on our group every 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Go cry in your coffin, you poofter. Seriously.
Just don't take any kids with you.
That
was one of the other really disturbing things about it, too, is when they show what they found in his home when they, you know, busted through his door and tried to find the child porn, is that they were really good about not showing, you know, very graphic stuff, but what they showed was really well produced. You know what I mean? Like, they look like real magazines. I thought, holy crap! Like, is there enough of? I guess there is. I mean, there must be. Is there enough demand that you can actually produce like a glossy, you know, whatever magazine of,
like the fanzines of the 80s? I mean, these are like Clio fucking productions, you know?
Yeah. Apparently, Dutch Boys or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Although the filmmaker, I don't know, was that his actual stash that was seized as evidence, or was that did he go get some slick gay magazines and just photograph them to look like they were child porn? Yeah, you know?
I think it's pretty much the same. It doesn't really matter. It's you know, unfortunately, it's got young children involved. It doesn't really matter what the fucking publication is. It's still gonna be disgusting and lewd. So,
right?
Yeah, I get your point.
Could have been a visual gimmick that was created, because I couldn't imagine the cops letting him have access to the evidence stash or whatever, which is probably
that's true. But they did have pictures from the case, and I remember that.
Yeah.
You know, I think it might have been because he mentioned some of the titles of the magazines, and one of them was in one of the pictures. Like, he mentioned chicken pickings.
Yeah,
she's like, what the hell? What is that? But he mentioned another name, and it was in one of the pictures. So maybe some of them were and some of them weren't. But
It was very disturbing to watch. Even though that was censored, I mean, it was still, You know, I've often or sometimes thought about people who work in the sex crimes unit. How fucking miserable and tough would it be being in that job?
Yeah.
I mean, you can become desensitized to a particular point, but you're still a human being. And, you know, it just, I think I've heard as well over here, and I'm sure it'd be worldwide for people who work in those areas, that they're tested for psychological disorders or something every month or every 3 months or something on the job.
Possibly. I mean, our man Paul Bishop, I think he worked in sex crimes for a while.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. I know his big thing was interrogation of rapists and such. So,
Wow.
It's like he might be the guy to ask about that. Mm. I wonder if he's seen this and what he thought. So, you know.
Well, they definitely need that kind of psychological testing for right-wing bloggers, because some of the freaks I run into, good God, they just...
Oh, good Lord. The whole right-wing blogosphere is like at war.
Okay.
But
yeah.
The funny thing is, the left wing blogosphere is too, because they can't decide if they want to back the Clintons or Bernie. So
I heard this really interesting theory. Somebody said that this happens periodically, where one side, you know, gets really crazy nutty, but they also get a lot of power because of it, and the other side is just like, oh shit, we got to do this too, because otherwise they're going to win, so they go crazy nutty too. And that kind of makes sense. But it's one big circle jerk and circular firing squad too. It's fantastic. I love it. But
electronic psychosis of the internet, so.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. And I keep trying to tell people every now and then, it's just like, guys, look, you have to realize that only 8% of people in America are on Twitter. Like, do not judge what's going on.
Is that all it is? It's 8%?
Yeah, it's tiny. Wow. Like, it is tiny, yeah. I mean, it's 60% of people on Twitter are fake accounts anyway, so.
What the hell you say, right?
Yeah. But anyway, yeah.
60%? Is that real? 60% of fake accounts?
I think it's something like that, yeah. And the reason people know it is when they had their IPO and they went public, you know, these numbers had to come out. They had to figure out exactly how many real users they have and how many were bots and how many were, you know, trolls pushing Trump from some Russian cave. People actually
know. Netherlands.
Yeah. Netherlands, yeah. Tweeting from their vampire coffins. Yeah, it's actually a very small portion, and that's what you got to keep telling yourself, because, you know, I get the absolute dregs, like the bottom of the barrel, attacking me with racist epithets and whatever, and I got to keep reminding myself, like, these are losers. Like, this is nothing. This is not what real America is. It's not, you know, representative of the people that are out there. So
I got to say one thing, though. I'm very, very happy to be one of the only 2,000. Now, you keep your people you follow to a limit of 2,000, don't you?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad to say I'm still one of those. I'm still one of the people like, well, last time I checked anyway.
I can still look at my timeline and it makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, once you get past 2 grand, it's just flying by. I don't know why. I don't know how you can do it. And it doesn't mean anything anymore. It's just like, it's just you're giving deference to people. Like, oh, I follow you, but I'm not actually going to read your tweets, you know?
I barely tweet anyways, like, maybe. I think I tweeted a guy who called himself the Selfie King last night. I'm like, oh, you're an idiot. And he retweeted or something. Oh, I called him a fucking idiot or something like that, and he liked the tweet. I was like, oh, whatever. I don't care.
It's a bot.
A bot, yeah. Pretty much, yeah. That's the one thing I used to realize. How come when I follow somebody, they automatically get a message like 10 seconds later saying, thanks for following me here on Facebook? I'm like, nah. Yeah. Is there some sort of automated thing that does that, is it?
Yeah,
some people have those automatic things, yeah. I think they're kind of stupid.
No, you just block them when I get those.
Yeah, right.
I really do, yeah. Yeah. By the way, Super, where are you on Facebook? You're gone. What happened to that?
I am. I was kicked out. This is really funny. This is actually pretty funny, because I like to make fun of illegal immigrants on Twitter. There's one in who's my favorite is Jose is writing. His name is Jose Vargas, and he's like this illegal immigrant star. Like, he's a celebrity now.
Yeah.
And he had a show on MTV, and it was like making fun of white people and white privilege and all this crap. And I hate all of that. I despise it. Mm. But this guy, like, he's making tons of money. He has a show on MTV, and he's bitching about living in the shadows, right? But I get kicked off of Facebook because they're asking me for papers on Facebook, and I am a legal American citizen, all right?
Hang on, say that again. They wanted papers that were illegal.
Well, they wanted to they hit me. They're like, hey, buddy, you know, Super Mexican isn't your real name. I'm like, really? How did you know? So then I changed it to something that sounded real, which is
Juan Super Mexicani.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, I changed it to that, and then maybe a year later, they're like, yeah, that's not your real name either, is it? I'm like, oh, okay. So then I changed it again. Well, I think, you know, third time's a charm. Then they asked me for an ID, and so to get back on there, I have to produce identification with my real name, and I have to change the account to my real name. So, I mean, it's
and
just
that ain't
absurd.
Happening, right?
That's not happening anytime soon, unless somebody spills my identity. But yeah, the really funny thing is they're changing those rules for transsexuals. If you're a transsexual, you can transgender, you can have a fake name because they get hounded by trolls and stuff, and that's politically correct to protect them.
So a transsexual,
or you're conservative.
Let me understand this. A transsexual can go in there with a fake name and it's fine, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, perfect. I fixed your problem.
I know. I got to get an operation. Is that what you're telling me?
No, no. Change your name. Go back in there. Just call yourself Super Mexican. And just put like a wig on the mask. That's it.
That's a good one, yeah.
What are you going to do?
Like that joke, are you a Mexican or are you a Mexican't? It's a little different.
Yeah.
It's a little different.
Right. Yeah. And then what you do is you just put your head on Serena Williams' body or something.
They'll still think you're a man then, so what don't do that.
Right.
No.
Yeah, well, I still need to get that Adam's apple, you know, shaved off.
And right.
Maybe I'll do that.
Put it on the Bruce Jenner photo. Put a mask on Bruce Jenner.
Caitlyn Mexican. Call yourself that.
Yeah, Caitlyn Mexican.
Yeah.
No, it's Mexicaitlyn, I think is how you go
with
that. Mexicaitlyn.
Because I wonder where you went. Damn, his page is gone. The whole thing's gone. Like, I can't understand your personal one's gone. All right, they pulled that on the rug on thee from that. But even the page is gone as well, which was really one of the interesting ones out there.
Yeah, I didn't know that. There are a lot of followers on that. Yeah, in fact, there's some people who are like exclusive Facebook people that are on Twitter, and I hear they got all the press. They're like, "What happened to him? Is he dead? Did they kill him? What happened?"
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out my residency papers so I can get back on Facebook.
Yeah,
right. A lot of people are in Facebook jail. A lot of people have done the Facebook jail.
Oh, I've done it twice. They got me recently.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they booted me off for 3 days.
Really? For what?
Oh,
were you posting Pegida stuff or?
No. Someone put a thing up of Muslims on there about Valentine's. I said, the only way Muslims celebrate Valentine's is by not beating their wives into the grave or something like that. And it's like, Facebook. <Jeez. laughs>
Yeah, they're real defensive of the Muslims.
Yeah, really, right. So, they sent me a thing back. I tried to log on. They're like, you've been blocked for 3 days for this comment. I'm like, okay, fucked, really? Seriously?
Wow, that's crazy.
So, yeah,
I know they're gonna start that up on Twitter, too. They have this...
oh, God, no one will be there. The 8% will go.
Yeah. They're starting up this anti-bullying council, and they stacked it with liberals, you know, like feminists and transgender advocates and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, it's coming. It's coming for all of us.
God, what are all those alt-cons going to do? All those guys, I'm going to lose 100 of my followers.
Yeah, right.
So all these guys go, suck Thor's hammer, you cuck, you know, anytime you say something against Trump, but it's over. Ow.
Wow.
Those guys have no other way of expression. Good Lord.
I felt really bad because I thought alt-right really meant like alternative right, where they were just not mainstream right, just kind of, you know, punk rock or something. Like, no, these are neo-Nazi freaks.
Yeah, I thought it was like Gavin McInnes or guys like that.
Yeah. Kind of, well, he's on the fence. Like, he's on the fence.
Yeah, he is on the fence. But it was kind of that type of right wing, you know, a conservative that might have tattoos and have done heroin or something.
That's what I thought. Yeah, right. Like, I'm all right. I'm down with that. That's cool. You know, you probably have a Yankee sister I can hook up with. That's all right. But
right. And it's just, but instead, it's these guys who are like, you know, watching Vikings a little too seriously. And
like cosplayers? You talking about them?
Kind of beyond that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, kind of like, I don't know.
Like that chick on that Star Trek documentary where she wanted to be called Commander, like her?
Kind of almost further than that, but almost with real world applications and stuff. You know, it's kind of a strange white pride thing without outright saying you're a white supremacist or, you know, in the Klan or whatever.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're really odd because they parse language very closely. So they won't, you know, they're very offended if you call them Nazis because they're not really Nazis, but they do believe that white people are better than everyone and they should rule over everyone. So it's like, well,
yeah, they call the Westboro, Westboro Baptist, whatever the hell they are.
It's, you know, it's an odd thing. It's like because they're very careful with the words and stuff, and you know, some of the positions I agree with, and some are crazy. You know, it's like everything.
No, it's right. Like, I'm in a very difficult position because I think they're right that you know, the left and the liberals have absolutely denuded the word racism of any meaning because they yell at it. They yell at every second. You're right about that. That doesn't mean that you accept racism and you're like, but
you called me a racist on Twitter once. Soup.
I did. What would you say? What did you say? Well, you are a racist, I'm pretty sure.
It doesn't mean you got to pull out for the 8% to see it, though.
Oh, okay. I'll go find that out and delete it.
This is for the 8%.
It's 2 years ago. Don't worry about it.
This is for the 8% that are still listening to the show after your opening 10 minutes.
That's a good point.
Yeah. That's the weed out the vampires who can't handle me saying something, you know, really.
It'll get us some alt cons listening, too. It's like, these guys know what they're about.
I just gotta listen to this guy. He really knows what's down.
It's Australia. We should resettle to Australia. We'll avoid the cuck-servatives down there.
Yeah. Come and join all the convicts down here. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, the some of what they're saying is right about the media and the way liberals have completely destroyed the meaning of the label racism and such, but it doesn't mean that you should suddenly say, hey, you know, David Duke's got some good ideas, so.
Yeah, no, that's a
thing. Kind of how they are.
Who's that Klan member that used to be on Stern as well?
Daniel Carver.
Daniel Carver, that was it, yeah.
Who owns a roofing business in Georgia.
Oh, God. Of all places.
Because Gara found it on Facebook. And I think,
of course he did.
Yeah, pointed it out to me. I was like, oh, wow. Wait, wake up, white people.
Hey, John, you know that Daniel Carver? He's got a roofing business in Georgia. Yeah. Hey, I should bring him up. Tell him I'm a black man who wants to work for him.
Gara used to hack his answering machine, as he explained on our show, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. He used to hack his answering machine, and he would have these Klansmen and racists would be calling people that Garrow hated because he would hack the message machine, and then he would like say, if you wanted the real truth about what's going on with white people, call this number, and it'd be some ex-girlfriend's number. He could be pretty spiteful back then. He was really in all that kind of hacking, prank, hoax stuff even back then.
So oh, yeah.
Don't be surprised. Fake Paramount.
Fake Paramount, obviously. That's right. But swinging back to the documentary, I like I said, I haven't got a great deal more to say on this. It bummed me out big time today.
I mean, I have to say, I like it just because I think it's very well produced, but it definitely is a downer. I mean, it's kind of like what's that other movie I like a lot? Is Requiem for a Dream?
Oh,
I really
God,
like that.
No, that's even worse.
Man, you just want to, you know, gouge your eyes out after you watch it. I mean, it's just...
I did. I'm still getting corrective surgery for it. That was a horrible movie. That's why I wear glasses as thick as they are, because I poured acid in my eyes after that movie. It was so bad.
But anyway, if anyone is still interested in watching it, I was kind of surprised it actually is on Netflix. You can watch it on Netflix. I ran out and bought a copy, so I have it with all the extras and whatever. But yeah, I got to check out that thing you were talking about on YouTube.
Yeah, it's called Capturing the Freedmen's What Was Left Out is what it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Very, I'll watch good. That. I found the DVD at like a library sale for like $2. And that's when I tweeted Super Mexican. I said, hey, we got to have you on the show. I have a copy of that movie now. Because he had mentioned it. He had mentioned it on his previous appearance.
And boy, do you regret it now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, what a bummer.
I'm going to sort of counteract that by watching Spy Kids 3 to 9 3D up in the theater.
I'll probably watch a slew of kung fu films or something.
If I can watch that Carlo Gugino in 3D, oh, please, any day. She's a fucking babe. I love that woman. My goodness. Don't laugh. I do. But anyways, how's that Hillary doing?
Oh, jeez.
I saw the Stay Puffed presidential candidate on the TV this morning waving her finger around. I'm like, oh.
Wait, this is what I'm curious about. What do Australians think about her?
I was just going to ask you.
Lesbian.
Or Trump, actually. I want to know what you guys think about Trump.
Trump.
Because you guys got all that masculine, you know, badass whatever thing too, right?
Julie Bishop. Oh, no, Tony Abbott. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the great Tony Abbott. Yeah. Trump is perceived pretty much as a wacko who's gone too far and could really do some damage if he gets in. He was like a novelty candidate over... That's how the perception I'm getting from people I talk to. He's like, oh, yeah, Donald. It's like Gary Coleman running in the California one back in 2000 and whatever it was. Like, oh, it's a novelty. Right. But now it's like, oh, shit, he's still there.
Yeah.
Is he just trying to feed his own ego? Does he really... Does he give a shit? I don't know. We just... It's like, okay. Hillary's like... She's seen as probably the best prospect by a lot of the people here. Not by myself. I think she'll be a complete fucking disaster if you get her in. Bernie Sanders is too old. I don't know why people... What is he, like 79 or something? 75?
Yeah, I think he's 74, I think. 74, yeah.
He's as old as Methuselah.
He'd be the oldest, wouldn't he? If he was elected, wouldn't he be the oldest president-elect?
He might be.
He'd have to be, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I don't think to... God, what was Ford? He was about 60-odd when he got in?
Yeah, most of them are like in their 60s, but the thing with Sanders is he's kind of like a fantasy disagreement candidate to Hillary.
Okay.
Totally. Yeah.
You know, that's what he is. He's like he's like the college kid fantasy rival to Hillary, basically.
In all honesty, when I listen to the news over here and they talk the politics, they do mention the American politics, obviously, because of the elections up in November. But they say that the ones I listen to pretty much saying the only real hope out there is that Ted Cruz. So they've got that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's sort of about it.
Pretty much.
Because isn't Rubio out of the race, basically?
He's still in it as someone on my podcast likes to point out. He's actually only one delegate below Cruz. It's just that Cruz won a state, like he won it outright. So he seems farther up. But it's still pretty much in the air. And I think it's because of what you say is that we really don't know how many of his followers are fickle. Celebrity followers, and once he starts losing, they might just all fall away. So it might collapse, or it might be this huge, historic movement sweeps him into the Oval Office, and then begins World War III because it's going to be absolutely absurd. I have all these alt-right neo-Nazi weirdos telling me like, Trump's going to deport you. Trump's going to deport you. I'm like, fuck that. I'll self-deport if he gets in because it's going to get bad, man. It's going to get really bad. I'm going to find a nice island in Mexico somewhere and get the hell out of here because I don't think it's going to be like deporting citizens or whatever.
If I can recommend a place, don't go to Michoacán.
Michoacán, yeah. I just like the name Michoacán because it sounds so cool.
Watch Cartel Land. You won't like the name or the place or anything about it after you've seen that documentary. It's horrible. Any place,
any mainland Mexico is just not terribly appeasing. But every time I see Michigan, in my mind I always say Michoacán because I like saying the name. But whatever. either that or Canada. I just go up to Canada and terrorize those hosers. I don't know.
Well, you're on the... Oh, no, you're not on the border of Canada there, are you? You're in New York.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It's still pretty far away.
Yeah.
But then I can still swing down and watch a Buffalo Bills game.
Yeah, I was going to say, really, you can swing down to the Buffalo Bills and watch them over there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's... Yeah, it's weird. I think it's still up in the air. It could go either way, and just the fact that Iowa that Cruz is able to take away Iowa is a good sign. That shows that he can be beaten, you know. But yeah, it's crazy. That's crazy.
You are whoever can cook the best potatoes in well, that's Idaho. Don't worry, I got my places mixed up. Whoever can be the most creative with potatoes will win that state. That's actually Idaho. Don't worry.
Iowa is the corn state.
No, right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, over here, people are just scratching their heads, going, more so. We just, like I've said it before numerous times. Why do you take so damn long just to pick somebody? That's what we can't work out.
Yeah, that is definitely a feature of the system that doesn't work and really kind of pisses a lot of people off. And that's one of the reasons that Iowa is one of the first primary states, is that they somehow work that out, and they will not give it up for anything, because that keeps the subsidies flowing into that state, because they're the first state that has a primary and everybody wants to win it. And so they promise them all these subsidies are going to keep flowing in there. So a lot of it is just this, you know, crony capitalism. I mean, it really is.
We used to never notice, but the 24-hour news cycle, and once you had competing news networks, it's just politics nonstop. You used to never notice this stuff until Iowa happened. Then you knew who was running. You didn't know in the previous fall who was actually running for president.
Or who was running for party.
You didn't know until Iowa.
Yeah, you're right. They were actually local, you know, primaries, and now they're all national. They're all nationalized, and because of that, it's just absurd. The candidates have to watch what they're saying because they know that it's going to be broadcast all over the country. So it's
Let me ask you guys, what was the go with Donald Trump and Megyn Kelly? What happened now? I saw a lot about it, but I didn't really catch the story itself.
It's about as irrational as anything else around Donald Trump. I mean, it really is. According to Megyn Kelly, if you listen to her interviews about it, what happened is that he seems to have a pattern of this, is that he's very attracted to female news people,
right?
And he tries to court them, and he tries to like ingratiate himself with them, but if they reject him, then he just goes crazy, because he can't stand the thought that there's, you know, one of them that isn't attracted to him,
right?
And he's done this before. And with her, he that didn't go through, and then she kind of went after him in one of the debates, and he has been slamming her on his Twitter and everywhere else because of it, and it is just bewildering. It's really crazy. And luckily for those of us who don't like him, the people who like her at Fox News kind of broke with him because of it. They're just like, all right, if you're going to go after Megan, which is ridiculous, you're a fool. But it really depends on – it's a lot like capturing the Friedmans. It depends on who you listen to.
Yeah.
He'll probably hit on that Julie Banderas next. Is she still on Fox? Oh, man.
I don't have cable, so I can't really have an opinion on it, because I only know what I read on Twitter and hear on the radio, so –
I love Fox News for the fact that the women on there are just so freaking hot. Just love it.
Oh, yeah. It's intentional. It's totally intentional.
Thank God it is as well.
But CNN gives you Candy Crowley, Candy Bar Crowley.
You know what's weird is CNN has some, like, okay-looking women anchors, but MSNBC seems to go out of their way to have very unattractive anchors.
Yeah,
I don't know what it is.
Hunter and I once said on a show, I think I brought it up, I said that in the 90s or the 80s, Rachel Maddow would have been too ugly to be a broadcaster on TV. She just wouldn't be allowed on television, not even in a small town market.
She looks like a 10-year-old boy. I mean, it's just,
Oh, that Arnie Friedman would like her a lot, then, I guess.
I was about to say, Arnie Friedman might go straight for...
Yeah, he really would. Yeah.
Well, there's one person she made straight, anyway, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Better than Greta Van Scientologist or whatever her fucking name is.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. That's how the weird thing is. You guys probably haven't noticed, but the on Fox News, there's a real division between people who have gone all Trump and they just love him, and Van Susteren is one of them. It's really odd. And then there's the other side who are just like, what? Like, what is wrong with you people? Like, you're not making any sense, you know? It's really odd to see them, you know, kind of battling it out at Fox News. It's weird.
I would like Anna Quammen went all nude on Fox News.
Wow, what do you think of that Uma Pumaraju?
I've not seen her. I've not seen
she's
her.
She's a weekend and a weekend anchor, and she must be like Indian or something. She's pretty cute.
Okay, I will have to definitely check her out. I just I don't like Harris.
Big really, black, you big don't black like Harris, Harris.
What's her name? I don't know her first name.
Harris Faulkner. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She just doesn't do much for me. Yeah, no, not much on the Peter meter. Remember that video game?
That's what Fox News is all about, the Peter meter.
Well, I'm referencing back to the documentary for that video game, the Peter meter.
That was terrible. Yeah, that was horrible.
Oh, man.
Yeah, horrible. All right. Well, what are we going to rate this?
Out of 10 leapfrogs, I give it...
Jesus. It's horrible.
No, that's terrible. Out of 10 years in prison, I would give it... you're not gonna like this. I would give it like a 7.5, 8. I really like it. I like these kind of introspective things that make you question reality and question, you know, truth. I like these, like Mementos, kind of like that. You know, things that actually have kind of a philosophical bent to them. I'm terrible at parties. No one invites me ever to parties, but I give it a 7.5 and 8.
Well, no one can find you. That's why.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you don't show your face. You don't know your name. Facebook bans you. You're out, man.
Yeah.
You're ghost. Right. I give it a 6.5. I probably would have rated it higher, but I find the documentary very tendentious. I think this is the word, tendentious or whatever. It's kind of like Michael Moore's documentaries where they have a point and they kind of cherry pick a lot of footage to kind of make that point and phase out what would actually throw it more into. Question. Although at the end, I wasn't convinced that they were innocent.
Like Roger and me.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, but to the Jarecki's credit, still, whatever point of view he's trying to pull for at the end of the documentary, I didn't think either was actually innocent. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I certainly didn't think the father was. The father was an admitted creep anyway. But the son, I wasn't convinced. I was like, I don't think he's innocent.
I was. I was convinced. I don't believe guilty.
You. I don't believe you. I think you're giving me a few affirmative action points there. You'd probably give it like a 5.5 or a 5. But
no, probably, I'm serious about it.
But you probably give it more points because of the indirect link that it gives to from child molestation to gayness. But anyway, go ahead, Stuart. Go.
I'm going to give this. I'm going to give this 5 disgusting, dirty Netherlands publications out of 10.
You know, PolitiFact, those scummy bastards, they actually ran me through one of the PolitiFact things. They were like, Super Mexican said this, and you know, they gave me a mostly false rating. And so I was like, screw that, and I went after them, and I gave them my rating, and it was 3.5 moldy, dirty old tacos that fell behind the sofa from Taco Bell out of 10. bastards.
The funniest was when I was talking to you a while ago, somebody tried to expose you with your phone number on YouTube.
Oh, that guy is a creepy weirdo, dude. Today this guy tweeted me like 20 tweets. He is this conspiracy obsessed, like creep, and did you see the video? Like I saw a couple of them. He posts these videos where he's in a mask.
Yeah.
Mask. And he's just like prancing around and like yelling about conspiracy theories. He is, that dude is unhinged, man. We're going to see him.
He hates you, something vicious.
He's also trying to convince me. Like, here's the thing. It's like the alt-right crowd. They like hate me and they call me all these racial epithets. But every now and then they're like, come on, man, you get it. You should be one of us. I'm like, are you serious? You know, like.
Yeah.
They're just crazy.
That guy's.
Well, I noticed some of them are Ron Paul guys. They're Ron. Yeah, they like because I listened to an interview with one of them, and he said he was a Ron Paul follower, and I went, "Oh, now it all makes sense."
Now it's
making sense.
These are sloppy seconds from Ron Paul getting screwed over in the elections 2012,
right? Because it was the Jewish banker conspiracy or whatever that was why he didn't win at the convention or whatever it was, but ugh. It's just, it's not good.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, I know all about that as I'm a Jewish lawyer from Burbank, according to Baldwin.
Yeah, really. You used that joke last time.
Well, the show was about Alec Baldwin, so it only made
well,
sense.
Well, it really was. Yeah.
Yeah. All I know is I think Lyndon LaRouche, you know, now more than ever. So that's all I can say about those.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I hope I didn't tip him over the edge, because that guy is unhinged, man. I'm telling you, we're gonna be sitting before a court someday, giving our testimony about how we should have stopped him earlier, because
he scaled the wall. He scaled the wall to assassinate President Cruz.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, the Goldman Sachs controlled Manchurian Cuban candidate.
Oh boy. All right, well, what do you want to plug?
Oh, let's see. Well, I have my blog, Super Mexican, with a two O's, not a U. And you can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Tumblr. You can't find me on Facebook because I'm living in the shadows on Facebook. But yeah, I'm all over the place. I got my own podcast, too. So come check it out.
Come check it out. Indeed. Been listening to it for a long ass time.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you, Super Mexican, for jumping back on. And,
thanks.
Appreciate it, and you'll come back again for Cartel Land.
Oh yeah, yeah. I hope so. If you let me on, I'm very sorry I depressed you both, but hopefully the next time will be a lot nicer.
Don't worry. I recommended Cartel Land. You're gonna hate me after you watch that one. Trust me. This seems like a fucking Singing in the Rain compared to Cartel Land. That's miserable as all hell. But I think it's very important because it talks about now. Because you were born in Mexico, right? No, you were born in America.
I was born in the best part of Mexico, which is California. Yeah.
Okay. But, yeah, you have visited Mexico before?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I've been there a lot of times, so yeah, with my family and, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah running a lot of, you know, secret packages over.
Right.
Yeah, of course you have. All right, then. No worries. Well, we'll have you back for that one, and it won't be 2 years from now. It'll be a lot earlier than that. All right?
All right, sounds good. We'll talk to you later.
Be good, Soup. All right. All right. And, Hannah, we should be back next week, hopefully, and we'll be back as well with something or another, and we'll worry about it then. So say goodnight, John.
All right, mahalo.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.